Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the May 17 edition of Commodity Week. Planters are finally rolling in the Midwest. What will it mean to the marketplace over the long term? We'll try to find out today.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today include Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign. Jackie Vakes is on the phone line from Stuart Peterson. She's also from here in Champaign County. On the phone line for the second half of our program, our guest will be Michael Cordonnier of Soybean and Corn Advisor. He is from Hinsdale, Illinois. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, let's start the program this week with this question. Talk really seems to have picked up about what I've been calling the gap period. So let's say that's from August to October, when old crop supplies may be very short. Will the United States import corn and soybeans up the Mississippi River? What are the implications? We'll start with you, Pete Manhart.
I don't know that we can do that, and I don't know what the cost is to get it from the mouth up to the center of the country. I think that's the big factor. What will that cost be? If it's $3 a bushel, I would say no. If they can get it done reasonable, I think we could do a few.
Bill Mayer?
I think we'll definitely import corn. I'm not sure if it'll come up to Mississippi. I guess it wouldn't be a total surprise if we saw that during that period. Of course, a lot's going to depend on what the summer weather brings and how quickly the crop comes on that we do have in the ground at this time.
And Jackie Vakes.
Well, you know, I was really surprised on this last Washington report that they actually didn't increase any imported corn at all. You know, they kept it at 125 million. I think, you know, we know that there's been corn that's coming to ADM from Argentina through Mobile, Alabama. And I think the bigger question probably is it going to be available to import? You know, with infrastructure problems, and I'm sure Dr. Cordonnier will talk about it, down south in South America, it may not be as easy to do at this time of year compared to what it was earlier in the year.
Let's take a look at some of the numbers as they settled up at the CME Group in Chicago. Futures for the corn finished the July contract at the high this week at $6.61, the low at $6.32.5, and a settlement price was 16.5 cents higher for the old crop at $6.52.75. At Friday to Friday, of course, December corn Friday to Friday was a dime lower at $5.19.5. Is this the beginning of a trend that we can continue to see through a good part of the summer months?
Well, I think that we've got some key areas here. We've had this 5.17 low in April, I believe it was. We got down to that today again and seemed to hold. We've, you know, kind of been testing the support, testing the resistance. And then 5.11, of course, was our low last year. So on a long-term continuation December chart, that's kind of the number that everybody's pointing at. I think we'll go down there and we'll test that. But I guess my thought is we'll probably go up here and try to run up and fill that gap that we left around 550 to 560 before we take it back down. And that's probably an opportunity to look at either getting some option strategies on or getting some stuff sold.
Bill says some opportunity left for old crop. What do you think? And new crop too?
I think there is opportunity for old crop there if you have any left. But if you don't, I would just be looking for managing the new crop. New crop we got sold at 550 to 570 here a month ago. We're down here again. I think it'll bounce at least one more time. I don't know if we can get back to that 550 area, but I think we ought to be able to get back to the 540. If we do get there, we're going to try to get clients to hedge and or do cash on what they need to get done.
Jackie, you're looking for a bounce or not?
I think we can bounce. I think the big thing will be Monday night's crop progress. You know, if we come in at 60 to 65% like they were talking, and if Iowa actually comes in 60% like they're talking, then I think we could see the trade force us lower on December and go down and test perhaps the 511 bill was talking about. I still think, you know, we have a lot of weather ahead of us, and when you look at, you know, making the crop, it's the June, July, and August time frame that make the corn and bean crop. So, you know, last year we went down and everybody thought the world was coming to an end, and just like that we turned things around. So I think we can bounce, but the one thing I caution people is, you know, don't put too many orders in at 550 because it's an extremely psychological place, 549 and a half, 549 and three quarters, or something like that. But I do think we've got a chance, Todd.
I certainly agree with Jackie on the weather. I think that's important. You know, is it friendly that we still have a third of the crop to plant, or is it bearish that we have two-thirds of it already planted? We did get a lot of progress made this week. But one thing I want to point out is I think didn't get a lot of talk this week, but the dollar index just looks like it's about ready to kind of make a breakout here. And if we see some confirmation of that next week, it looks like it's got some upside potential there. And I think that could maybe be bearish to the corn market and the grains in general.
Would that mark inflation in that case then?
I'm not sure that I'm ready to go that far yet. I mean, I think longer term we're looking at. I kind of have a feeling, though, that I see the economy more analysts out here being a little bit more friendly to the economy, both U.S. and globally, than what we had seen, say, 6 months ago.
And let me follow up one more with you, Bill, and then I want to go to Jackie Vakes very quickly. So if what you're telling me then is simply that the dollar, if it does come to this breakout to the upside, is going to make corn more expensive out of the United States. Is that right?
Yeah, and I don't want to put too much emphasis on that because a big part of the reason that the index moved was because of the yen and a euro, I think it was. There's two currencies, really, of the index that really moved. But, yes, that could be the result. It would be negative for corn if we see it move up into, say, that 86 area, something like that.
Jackie, let's transition from that or more expensive corn out of the U.S. to what's available in supply and where it will be positioned in Brazil once we get to the months of July, maybe even June.
Well, you know, I guess I'd have to say I think I'd rather have you ask that question to Dr. Cornier. I believe that the big issues down there are, of course, their double crop corn, but I think so much more is the infrastructure and their inability, perhaps, to move both beans and corn at the same time, and so that is my point, is just that it may not be as easy to get to where we're going. I wanted to just step back and talk about what Bill was talking about too. I think that you know, the dollar situation is very interesting, and I just attended a meeting not long ago where the Fed talked, and they were talking about the 6.5% unemployment and the 2.5 GDP, and they were very, very clear about the fact that those are only talking points. Those are not points to make any changes on QE3, because generally they don't know what they're going to do when we get to that point as far as what they can do with all of this, all the bonds that they bought. Who's going to want to buy them? Because they have to start moving them if that's the case, if they stop QE3. And nobody wants to buy them, their choices are push them out into the economy and drive inflation crazy, or put them into reserves with the banks and pay the banks interest to hold them. And so I think that there's a lot of things that are going to come to light probably throughout our growing season here that could have a real impact on what the dollar does and that whether it does go higher or not. But, you know, the bottom line still is the dollar can go higher as long as the people who are buying from us, the currency also moves with us.
Pete Manhart, as we've talked earlier in this program, it appears by the trades account that we may be 60% or 65% along in corn planting when Monday comes around. What does that number mean to the marketplace over this May 20, May 21 time period?
Well, if you look at history, the May 20th time frame, that's when everybody says you're starting to lose yield. Some people start it now at May 10th, but really it's the summer weather. And we had a weather forecast long-term come out this summer. It said hotter than normal and drier than normal June, July, and August. So I think that will have more effect than the others that we were talking about.
Turn your attention to the soybeans now. July contract of 14.50 high for the week, the low at 13.93.5. A settlement price at $14.48.5 was 49.5 cents higher than it was the previous week. November beans at $12.28.25, up 22.75 cents. I'm still wondering about the WASDE number, which showed a greater supply of soybeans available at the end of the 2013-14 marketing year, something above 200 million. Bushels, and why it is that we might want to take new crop soybeans any higher than they are already, Bill.
Well, I think the market factor this week and what we've been seeing that's been supporting the soybeans is the old crop tightness. And, you know, the crush report came out on Wednesday. It was lower than expectations, but it's still a bigger number of crush. We're crushing more beans monthly than what we can really crush and still end up with the kind of carryout that the USDA says that we're going to have unless we import a lot of beans. So that's the factor right there. Now, why we're continuing to export and crush and sell the meal, I think, you know, it's a logistics and freight and some of those questions. But I think the market feels like we still have to raise prices. Some still ration usage here on this old crop beans.
Yeah, I think old crop beans have helped pull it because of all that the Bill said. And then new crop, because of the fast pace this week of planting corn, a lot of ideas of, well, we won't switch as many corn acres to bean acres were out there, and that helped support new crop also. Even though some companies are still raising their estimates of acreage to plant to beans this year, it's not as high as it would have been if we wouldn't have had this open week this week for planting corn.
Jackie, what do you see in the products and what has interested you most this week from the beans?
Well, I think that, you know, I guess I'd like to take a step back too. You know, when you look at the big picture and you look at the meal products and you look at the oil, you know, then we came out with the crush that we've had. We know that there's been lots of demand. And meal demand has been growing as we're going along. So I think that when you look at the bean picture, it was a shock, at least to me, when I saw the WASDE numbers reduce the bean acres by 100,000 acres. I don't think hardly anybody expected to be blindsided by that. And I think I can't add anything to what Bill and Pete said, because everything they said is the way I feel about it, too. But I think that in general, you know, the beans are an area that the people who do speculative business and your funds really like them, because they're a real mover. You know, they'll move 15 cents to corn 6 or 7 or 8 many, many times. And so I think at this stage of the game where we still don't know what's going on, what we're seeing is just an awful lot of profit-taking at times, you know, coming in and buying or coming in and selling depending upon what they feel, and tremendous amounts of spreading going on. So I still think until we get a little bit further into this and we find out more about where corn planting is, and I'm confused, to be honest with you, because I know that we didn't plant as much corn down south, and I know with our clients that there's more beans down there. So, you know, it's 6 of 1, 6 of 1, 6 of another. Something that I think might be interesting to people listening, though, is that if you took all of China's demand for beans, it would represent 50 million U.S. acres if we supplied every bean to them. Can you imagine that? I mean, and so they definitely are the big dogs, and I think when you see beans go back and forth, a lot of times it's based on what people think are going on or is going on as far as the economy over in China.
I guess I just want to say I think that these price levels, and I think we can move beans up a little bit higher. I think 1250 is a reasonable target on the November futures. But I think these are pretty good values that, you know, as you're looking out there at new crop prices, because I guess what I see is this South American competition. We may see that more as we get into the, you know, late summer and next fall, which is really going to hurt us more than it probably would now because we're, you know, we're going to be trying to get rid of our beans at that time.
Yeah, they're still going to be shipping beans and corn in August and September and October against our new crop stuff. So, yeah, I think this price where we got beans right now, I would be making sure I've got a lot of those covered and or some of them cash sold.
Let me just double check with Jackie, because I think, Jackie, that you would be the first and the last voice that would say that these are good values for producers to think about selling beans. Is that what you told me to begin with?
Absolutely. I think that, and when you say selling, I think I'm much more on the side of using options, because we really don't know where we are. And just like we talked, we have a long ways to go into this season. But there'd be no way that I would not want someone to take some type of action, just because of the fact that, number one, we don't know where we are in corn acres, and we certainly don't know where we are in bean acres according to this last WASDE report. So if we all of a sudden come in and find a whole bunch more bean acres, which we could at the end of June, it could really put a nail into the heart of beans. And so I think when you have opportunities like this, you've got to be willing to do something.
Back in 2 minutes.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. This last week was finally dry with temperatures close to average. The only rain to speak of was from scattered thunderstorms in western Illinois between Quincy and the Quad Cities. The National Weather Service's Climate Prediction Center released their temperature and precipitation outlooks for the month of June and for this summer. There isn't much to report for Illinois. We have equal chances of above, below, and near normal temperatures and precipitation for both the month of June and the three-month period of June through August. The only exception is far southern Illinois, which has a slightly higher chance of above-average temperatures for the June through August time period. The good news is that they don't see us having an increased chance for drought this summer. According to the National Weather Service, it will finally start feeling like summer. High temperatures on Saturday are expected to be in the 80s across the state. Overnight lows will be in the 60s. Sunday will be a little warmer with highs in the upper 80s across the state. Monday could see highs in the low 80s. Highs will be in the upper 70s and 80s on Tuesday and Wednesday. There is a good chance for rain starting on Sunday night, with showers and thunderstorms likely on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Some of these thunderstorms could be severe. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
This is the May 17 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists include Pete Manhart, Bill Mayer, and Jackie Vanks. On the phone line with us is Michael Cordonier of Soybean and Corn Advisor. He is from Hinsdale, Illinois. Michael, thank you so much for taking the time with us. Let's answer that question we asked in the first half of the show. Will corn be available from Brazil, and can they actually make it work as an import into the United States?
Well, as mentioned earlier in this report, there is going to be a long tail to the Brazilian exports. Last year, they produced about 66 million tons of soybeans. This year, it's about 81 or 82 million. So they have about 6 or 7 million tons more to export. And they're at their export capacity. So the only way to get more beans out the door is to stretch it further into the fall. Last year, they were done exporting beans August or September. This year, they had a delayed start because of delayed harvest and wet weather, and it got a lot more. So I expect Brazil to be exporting soybeans October, November, December. Now, they can't do both at the same time. They don't have the capacity. So the corn, which will start to be harvested, the safrinha corn, the second crop, they'll start to harvest in June in Mato Grosso, but they don't start exporting until like August or September, when the beans start to go down. So if they're still full force on the bean exports, then the corn gets pushed even further back into the wintertime. So I expect them to be exporting corn you know, all the way through to January, February, maybe even March of next year, depending on the markets, of course. So there is some capacity to get some out, but not in any large volumes.
But what you're telling me is there's not a capacity to get it out when it might be needed in the United States.
Correct. If you need it in August, it's going to be tough.
What do you think about the planting progress being above 60 or above 65? And what do you look at acres on beans?
Okay, I think we'll come in Monday afternoon between 60 to 65% planted on corn. I think we did about 35% this week. We had 27% last week. Now, the acres thing is very interesting. Several weeks ago, I thought we would lose 1 to 3 million acres of corn. At that time, the prediction was for very severe flooding along the Red River in North Dakota and a lot of snow melt. Well, it did not turn out nearly as bad as expected. So a week or two ago, I lowered that to maybe 1 to 2 million acres not being planted to corn. Now, I think with this open week we've had, now maybe closer to 1 million acres not going to corn. So I think we will lose some corn, some of that up in North Dakota, some down in the Delta where it got too late to plant, and then odds and ends here and there. And most of those, of course, will go to soybeans. So I do expect a little bit lower acreage for corn and a little bit higher for soybeans.
Talk to me about I was looking at some drought monitor maps comparing this year to last year this afternoon. Tell me about the western Nebraska, central Nebraska, and what kind of shape they're in and how serious is the drought out that way?
Well, it's still serious, but I would only say it's serious west of the Missouri River. If you go out to, say, Grand Island, Nebraska, they have enough topsoil moisture for germination to stand establishment. That's no problem. But the subsoil is still very short. So I would say Nebraska is okay to get started, but they will need some more moisture here going forwards. Now, I don't think there'll be a restriction on irrigation water like there was at the end of the last year. And if there isn't a restriction, then I think Nebraska could probably live with their situation if it doesn't get worse. But they're still in a sort of a precarious position. But I think every place east of the Missouri River has been pretty much rectified. There's still some short subsoil moisture here and there, but we still got time to solve that problem here going forwards.
It's interesting, Dr. Mike, that you talk about Nebraska. I just got a text that maybe half an hour ago from one of my guys who is west of the Missouri, and he said there's irrigating going on already, which is, he was pretty shocked. He said that's awfully early to be able to see that. But the question I have for you is this. You know, in many areas, we are later than normal. So in some places, you're seeing people cut down on, the length of days. In other words, some of the northern tiers are looking at going to 82-day corn instead of 95-day corn. What do you think the implications for yield, you know, are in that circumstance?
Right. I think we're going to have a good 50% of our corn planted during the second half of May, and that's generally when the yields start to go down. And I do think there will be some switching to earlier maturities, which are not quite as high-yielding as the later ones. Right today, I would use a corn yield of 155 to 156. I think that's justified based on the lateness of the planting. You know, the WASD guys brought it down to 158, which I thought was kind of aggressive for them, but I thought they went certainly in the right direction. So I would say we have to be cautious about our corn yield and mid-150s for the time being. And I would give it maybe a 15% possibility. We could do 160 or a little above, and then maybe a 25% possibility we could do 150 or lower. So obviously I think there's more of a downside risk than upside potential. Now, this corn has been planted in a very small window this year, so pollination is going to be in a small window as well. And I think we'll probably hit 50% pollinated sometime during the third week of July. And I always get a little bit nervous having so much in a small window. The temperature isn't all that important to me for pollination. It's always an interaction of temperature and soil moisture. And the further you go into July without being pollinated, the more likelihood you have dry soil moisture. So then, you know, if you have dry soils and 95-degree temperatures, you can have some problems. So the late pollination has me a little bit nervous.
I'm sure you've got a balance sheet. If you have a 155 yield, what does your production and then your consumption show?
Well, the production is going to be 13.7 to maybe 13.8 or 9, so a little bit short of 14 billion bushels. On the consumption side, I really don't track that very closely, but if we get a mid-150 corn yield, we got a comfortable supply, all right? Certainly much better than we've had the last couple of years, but we have to get that 150. And if we get below 150, then I think it gets pretty tight and it gets kind of interesting. But right now, I would say let's shoot for a mid-150 type of bushel yield.
What are you looking at on the soybean supply and demand side as far as that same thing that you compared to corn?
Well, I thought the WASDE guys were very optimistic in the soybean yield. They had 44.5 bushels per acre. That would be a record soybean yield. And the fact that we've had a delayed spring, which really doesn't affect soybean yields, but we've had three disappointing years in a row for soybean yields. So I wouldn't get too far ahead of us predicting a record soybean yield. The only way you get that is if you have a very, very good June, July, and August, especially July and August. Go ahead.
I was just wanting to ask a quick word on wheat, like the hard wheat. What do you say? I mean, they always say you can kill wheat nine times. This might be the test of it this year. I think we've done it at least six or seven times. What are you seeing in the wheat out west?
Well, they've had several frosts, for sure, which was not good. Dry weather, of course, added to the problem. So it's going to be, I think, disappointing. I was surprised the wheat tour, I think it was in Kansas, the yield they had for Kansas, to me sounded quite optimistic. But wheat is a hardy grass, as everybody knows. I like to say, it grows in the sidewalk. So it's kind of hard to kill wheat. But it's had a tough go of it this year, and my guess is it's going to be a disappointing wheat yield out west. Now, the soft red winter wheat should be much better. And, in fact, I've had a couple questions already about double crop soybeans. Are they going to be delayed because of the soft red winter wheat? Well, yeah, they might be a week or two delayed because the wheat's been kind of slow in maturing, but for double crop soybeans, it's much more important having soil moisture at the time of planting. So if the wheat comes off early, but the soil is very, very dry, you're going to wait to plant your beans until it gets some moisture. If the wheat comes off late and you get good soil moisture, you plant it right away. So I think it's going to be the soil moisture determined a little bit more for the double crop soybeans with the soft red winter wheat.
Thank you so much, Michael. We appreciate it.
Always my pleasure.
Michael Cordonnier is with Soybean and Corn Advisor. He's out of Hinsdale, Illinois. Time for a final word from our panelist. We'll start with Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson.
Well, it looks like we're headed into another very challenging and very interesting year. I'd say that, again, and you've heard me say it so many times, make sure you have yourself prepared for whatever the market throws at you, whether it goes down or it goes up. Make sure you get yourself protected.
Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities.
It's been a busy week here in the central part of the U.S. Be sure you're being careful and being the way you need to be to be ready to not have accidents.
And Bill Mayer.
I think you got to be prepared and ready. If we do have some kind of a pop here in the corn, to get some positions on and get some coverage on one, either options or cash sales.
Our thanks to Bill Mayer. He's with Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois. Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson, also from Champaign, Illinois. Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. And I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, reminding you, as Pete said, be safe out there and do take about a 15 to 20 minute nap each and every afternoon. You're probably running your planter, I don't know, maybe 16 to 18 hours a day. 15 or 20 minutes will save you a lot of time over time. I'm Todd Gleason. Okay, that's all she wrote. Thank you, guys.
Okay, yeah. Thank you, Lud.
All right.
Zach, are you still there?
I'm here.
Hey, the last time you and I talked, we were talking about them maybe building an ethanol plant up in Mato Grosso for corn ethanol. Are they still pursuing that, do you know?
Yes, they are. And in addition to that, they're retrofitting some ethanol plants to use either grain sorghum or corn during the couple months when they don't harvest sugarcane. They stop harvesting sugarcane in December, then you start back up in March. Usually that's just downtime and you don't do anything, but some guys are retrofitting so they can use some of the corn and grain sorghum. They need to do something in Mato Grosso. The corn is produced out of position. Mato Grosso is going to do maybe 17 million tons of corn, and they only use like 3 million tons. And the transportation cost just kills them getting it out of the state. It can cost $3 a bushel to move that corn to southern Brazil or to a port. So they're just trying to find ways to use it in the state. More feedlots, so more cattle going into feed. Now, actually, the cattle and feedlots dropped the last couple years because corn prices have been so high. But now the price of corn in Mato Grosso today is about at the cost of production, around $3 a bushel, $3.20 a bushel. They expect it to go to below that when harvest starts in June. So the government has already said they're going to purchase up to 3 million tons of corn at the guaranteed minimum price, which is right at $3 a bushel, and then the government will subsidize the transport and then the resale either to exporters at the ports or to livestock guys in southern Brazil. Now, to the government, this is a lose-lose-lose. They lose when they buy it, they lose when they transport it, they lose when they sell it. And it's just a way of trying to subsidize the corn market. As a result, the full-season corn area in Brazil is going to go down next year in southern Brazil, and I expect the Safrinha corn acreage to hold even at best, and maybe to go down, because the guys will lose money this year on the corn. So they might do grain sorghum or sunflowers or canola or cotton or edible beans or, you know, something other than corn that's less expensive to plant. So corn's been had a good run in Brazil for a couple of years, but prices now are, you know, cycling down.
Yeah. Interesting. Do you see I just lost my train of thought. Oh, that's just terrible. I'm sure somebody else has something to ask you. But
I was wondering about the privatizing the ports. Is that a big deal or not?
That is a big deal. Now, they just passed it last night. The Brazilian Congress passed it. And President Dilma will sign it as soon as it hits her desk. The unions don't like it, of course, because it doesn't guarantee union labor as these ports are privatized. Now, this provision calls for about 175 either grain terminals or ports going from public operation to private. Now, the state would still own the facility, but you can they would be leased out to private individuals, and they would run it. Now, this is not going to affect the infrastructure in Brazil in the short term. There won't be any improvements at the ports 12 months from now compared to now. This process is going to be very long. It's going to be very detailed. You have to put out bids and all that sort of thing. 5 years from now, it should make a difference. But it's going to take a while to get all this sort of in place. And I have to add, in Brazil, things always look really good on paper. But the reality a lot of times isn't as good as what it looks on paper. Yeah. So the intention is to privatize all these things. How good it's done and how fast it's done and how well it turns out, I think it remains to be seen.
Is the state and the national government there as broke as we are and as dumb as we are here?
Well, you know, Brazil's kind of on a roll, and they are banking on these oil deposits that they found off the coast of Rio. Now, these deposits are 20,000 feet down, so they're very deep, some of the deepest in the world. It's going to be really expensive to get it out, but if the oil is there the way they think it is, Brazil could be the third largest oil producer in the world down the road. So the government is really banking on having, you know, more money to spend down the road. They are spending themselves silly right now. They're building a dozen new football stadiums for the World Cup. Then you got to build for the Olympics 2 years after that. So they are spending like drunken sailors, and they're just got their fingers crossed that this oil comes in as they hope it will.
Wow. Do you think, Doc, that the, you know, you had said they tore up, 1.6 million approximately acres of pasture to put in the corn and beans this year up in Mato Grosso. Do you see that going back into pasture again and the cattle numbers coming back if they're just at break-even on corn?
No, I don't think so. Cattle is not a very good economic option right now. You kind of make money on cattle, but not very much. And the reason they plow them to pasture is they see the guy next door making a whole lot more money on a crop of soybeans and corn, two crops in the same field.
Mm-hmm.
So once it goes out of pasture, I don't think it comes back. But you got to remember, Mato Grosso has the largest soybean crop in the country and the largest cattle herd. There are, I think, 30 million cattle in Mato Grosso. That's mm-hmm. about three times more than Texas. So,
wow.
And a lot of Mato Grosso is still undeveloped. Mato Grosso is just such an enormous place. So there's room for everything. In fact, I would suspect that they keep plowing up more pasture and turning it into corn and soybeans. Maybe not as fast as last year, but certainly it's going to continue going forwards.
Well, yeah, it's amazing.
If they could put in some more railroads up there and lower the cost of transport, then it makes it more advantageous. Ironically, Mato Grosso is probably the most expensive place in the world to grow soybeans. It's kind of weird, but it's all due to transportation. And they just are very slow getting that transportation sort of house in order.
Do you have any idea how long it might take them to be able to get to the Amazon River? You know, wouldn't that improve their transportation dramatically?
Oh, they are asphalting a road as we speak from northern Mato Grosso straight north to the Amazon. Now, that road was supposed to have been done this past end of 2012, and now it's scheduled to be done the end of this year. Now, at the river, Cargill already has grain facilities. Now, so that road will be asphalted, and the instant that road's asphalted, most of the trucks from central Mato Grosso will head north instead of heading south. It's not quite as good as what it might seem, though, because when a truck goes south with beans, it can backhaul other things,
mm-hmm.
like fertilizers and merchandise and that sort of stuff. If that truck goes north to the Amazon, there's nothing to backhaul. So there's not quite as much savings as you might expect. But in the long run, there's a Chinese company in negotiations with the state of Mato Grosso to build a railroad from the capital of Mato Grosso right aside of this highway straight north to the Amazon. And they're in negotiations right now, you know, on land and costs and all that sort of thing. If that railroad would get built, and if they give it to the Chinese to do, the Chinese will do it. They're very good at that. The hang-up is the Chinese say, okay, we'll build the railroad, but we want to run it after we build it. And the Brazilians said, no, we kind of want you to build it and give it back to us after it's done. So that's sort of a contentious issue at this point.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you all so much. I left the recorders going. Is everybody okay if I use that on the web?
Sure.
That's fine with me.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Everybody have a good
weekend.
All right, talk to you later.